This podcast contains descriptions of violence against children and adult language and is not suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Suffer the Little Children, the true crime podcast giving voices back to the victims of child abuse and shining a harsh spotlight on the parents, guardians, and caretakers who silence them. I'm your host, Lane, and this is episode 68, James Needs Justice. If you follow the podcast or the blog on social media, you've probably seen my many posts about two-year-old James Beale. I covered James's story in episode 26 of this podcast, as well as in a detailed blog article in August of 2020. During a contentious custody battle between James's mother, Kara Witkowski, and his father, Thomas Beale, Kara missed a court appearance due to an error on her attorney's part, and in her absence, the judge granted Tom full custody of the couple's two children. 3 months later, James was brought to the hospital to be treated for a prolapsed rectum so severe that it required surgery and 9 separate hospital admissions during that single month. Just weeks after that, shortly after James's second birthday, James died under suspicious circumstances in his father's care. The very next day, even before an autopsy was completed, the police department in Palatine, Illinois, announced that foul play was not suspected. The state's autopsy was inconclusive, but even after a second, independent autopsy revealed James died from an unexplained spinal cord injury, to date, no investigation has been opened into James's death. Kara, however, is not allowing the death of her son to be brushed under the rug. In this episode, I'll go over the updates to James's story since episode 26 was released, and you'll also hear my recent conversation with Kara, who refuses to be silent until James's death is thoroughly investigated. This is the infuriating case of James Beale revisited. Before I get into the updates, I'd like to thank my newest patrons, Ava from Maple Valley, Washington, and Kristen from Minneapolis, Minnesota. Thank you both so much. I truly appreciate all of my patrons for helping me get closer to my goal of devoting myself full-time to the blog and the podcast. If you'd like to support the show, you can do so at patreon.com/stlcpod. Pledges of $10 and up get access to Patreon-exclusive bonus minisodes, where I tell the stories of even more children. I've got 2 bonus minisodes out there now, and I'm working on the 3rd as we speak. I'm a little behind on that, though, only because I spent a few days last week driving over 1,200 miles throughout New Jersey, New York State, and Pennsylvania to visit multiple cemeteries so I could pay my respects to several children whose stories I've told on the blog and the podcast. Photos from those visits can be found on the Suffer the Little Children blog Facebook page in an album called Road Trips. I left painted rocks on each of their graves as a little memento from all of us that they'll never be forgotten. I definitely plan to make more of these trips as time and distance allows. It means everything to me to help keep the memories of these kids alive. As for today's case, if you haven't yet heard episode 26, in which I first told the mind-boggling story of 2-year-old James Riker Beale, you'll need to listen to that one first if you haven't yet. There are a lot of details and a ton of moving parts in this story, so listening to the original episode will help today's episode make sense, at least as much as this particular story can make sense. I'll link to episode 26 in the show notes to make it easy to find. Fair warning before you listen to that one. When you're finished listening, I guarantee you'll be enraged. I first spoke with Kara Witkowski last summer when I read James's story in a Facebook group and contacted her about covering it on the blog and the podcast. What Kara had to say left my jaw on the floor. James's story was so egregious, so unbelievable, that if Kara hadn't produced an endless quantity of receipts backing up everything she said, I may not have believed it at all. As I told her, I'm the last person who could be considered a conspiracy theorist, but when all signs point to the intentional cover-up of the death of a toddler, it's hard to deny that's exactly what's going on. Since I released episode 26 and my blog post about James, which I'll also link in the show notes, several developments in the case have come to light. Mind you, none of those developments whatsoever involve an actual investigation being initiated into the suspicious death of this innocent 2-year-old boy. But nonetheless, there's plenty to report today, including Kara's superhuman efforts to push James's case forward. First up, I want to address the apparent recasting of multiple characters in this tragedy. Let's start with Commander Steve Bratcher of the Palatine Police Department, the same man who announced to the public that no foul play was suspected less than 24 hours after James died, and even before the state's autopsy was completed. Commander Bratcher, a man who appears to be in his 40s with plenty of good working years ahead of him, supposedly retired in September of 2020 without giving any notice, without a public announcement, and without so much as a going-away party within the department. That seems an odd move by the son of the former police chief, especially in light of the fact that Bratcher's so-called retirement came on the heels of the results of the second independent autopsy being released, revealing James's spinal cord injury that the first autopsy did not uncover. Not to mention the fact that Bratcher left his position just as a groundswell of public support for justice for James really began taking off. Who knows? Maybe the timing is just a coincidence. Then again, maybe it's not. In episode 26, I talked about how the judge originally overseeing the custody case, John G. Dalton of Kane County, Illinois, recused himself from the case in October of 2019, just prior to James's death, saying he could no longer be fair to Ms. Witkowski. I've never heard anything like it. Judge Dalton was removed as a family court judge in Kane County altogether, now presiding over evictions and property arbitration cases, which isn't exactly a step up. He was replaced on Kara and Tom's custody case by Judge Renee Cruz, who, much like his predecessor, ignored evidence that Tom had raped Kara, including screenshots of Tom's own admissions to the act. Judge Cruz also overlooked allegations against Tom of possessing child pornography before the state's attorney decided not to pursue charges, and, worst of all, the judge did not alter his course of action or his behavior even after James's death. Throughout the following year, Judge Cruz continued Dalton's former pattern of ignoring emergency motions and threatening Kara with jail time when she spoke out. Interestingly, in January of this year, Judge Cruz also was removed from Kane County Family Court. Instead, he now presides over the Traffic and Misdemeanor Division, which, again, doesn't sound like a promotion to me. Then again, who am I? If you just listened to episode 26, you'll definitely remember the name Julie Pirtle, the attorney who acted as guardian ad litem for Kara and Tom's children until she ultimately withdrew from the case less than 2 weeks before James died. Coincidentally or not, right around the same time Judge Dalton recused himself. As it turns out, Ms. Pirtle is no longer on the Kane County list of GALs at all. I wonder why that is.
Things that make you go,
Now, I'll get into a few updates about Tom himself. For one thing, you may recall that on the night James died, Tom told police he had left for work prior to his stepmother, Helena, finding James unresponsive on her husband's bed. Well, as it turns out, Tom reportedly didn't have a job at the time and hadn't been working for the previous 2 weeks. So if he wasn't going to work, why did he leave the scene that night, conveniently just before James was found unresponsive? Tom's well-documented attempts to control and gaslight Kara continue to this day, which you can see for yourself in many screenshots posted on the Justice for James Facebook page. Tom and Kara currently share 50-50 custody of their 5-year-old daughter, which you'll hear Kara talk about during our discussion later in this episode. In December, Tom was charged with violating Kara's order of protection against him due to continuous harassment of Kara through their court-ordered communication platform, an app called Our Family Wizard, which is commonly used in contentious divorce and custody situations. Tom apparently thought no harm would come to him, despite constantly insulting, harassing, and threatening Kara in messages sent through the app, which are fully accessible to the court. It's not entirely clear how this charge has been resolved, because multiple entries in the court record are notated as matter off record, but Tom is scheduled for a sentencing hearing on July 20, 2021, at 1:30 p.m. before Judge Keith Johnson. Kara is also pursuing contempt of court charges against Tom, who refuses to allow their daughter to speak to Kara during his parenting time, despite signing an agreement stating that each parent is entitled to an hour-long phone call every day when their daughter is with the other parent, and despite the fact that Kara purchased a phone for her daughter to use just for that purpose. Furthermore, despite their daughter's multiple disclosures of sexual abuse to multiple professionals, all of whom recommend she be taken to see a specialized therapist, Tom refuses to allow this. He continues to insist they involve DCFS via a program Kara described as
one step before foster care. I will never put my child into this invasive program or allow the people who ignored the opinion of a forensic pathologist to make decisions for the safety and wellness of my surviving child.
Considering the way DCFS blatantly ignored the possibility that James's catastrophically prolapsed rectum, which was described in reports as being
the size of an orange,
and which could not be repaired by surgery, could possibly have been caused by sexual abuse, I completely understand why Kara would be averse to allowing them to oversee her daughter's well-being. If you're like me, you're a bit overwhelmed by all of the teeth whitening products on the market. This next sponsor has provided me with some very interesting facts to pass on to you. Fact 1. Teeth whitening does not whiten your teeth. It removes the stains and restores the tooth to its natural color. Natural colors vary per person, but for most, it's an off-white or slightly yellowish undertone. Fact 2. Teeth whitening does not damage teeth, but it does temporarily dehydrate. When dehydrated, the pores in the enamel are open and exposed. Open pores invite acids and sugars, which, as we all know, lead to tooth decay. Avoid or minimize acidic and sugary substances for at least 24 hours after whitening. Also, avoid staining substances as the teeth are more susceptible to restaining during this period. Fact 3. Tooth sensitivity is the result of tooth dehydration. When the pores of the enamel are open, the teeth become dehydrated, exposing the nerve to the elements. As the tooth rehydrates, the sensitivity will dissipate. To accelerate the rehydration and curb sensitivity, use a post-whitening application known as remineralization or desensitizing gel. Fact 4. Caps and veneers cannot be whitened because they do not have pores for the stains to latch to. Prior to having dental work, you should whiten your teeth, restoring them to their natural color, as the dentist will be color matching to your current shade. Fact 5. The key to teeth whitening is the delivery device, so as long as a whitening product is a peroxide-based whitener, it will remove the stains. What differentiates one product from the next is the device that holds the whitening agent to the tooth without interruption. Whitening strips neglect the crevices and molars, and they slide on your teeth. Saliva floods the generic trays because they are bulky and do not create a seal. Oh, and you likely did not know this, but LED lights are novelty items that add no benefit. You need a high-output UV light only found at the dentist. Don't fall for the gimmick. If you insist on a light that does not work, get one on Amazon for under $5. The number one whitening device recommended by dentists is the custom-fitted tray. You can have your dentist make you trays for $300 to $600, or you can head over to smilebrilliant.com and use their lab direct mail-in process for a fraction of the price you would pay at the dentist. Oh, and if you grind your teeth at night, you can also purchase Smile Brilliant's custom-fitted night guards, once again, for a fraction of the price the dentists charge. Once again, that's smilebrilliant.com, and use my coupon code CHILDREN for an exclusive Suffer the Little Children discount. Today on the podcast, I have a very special guest, Kara Witkowski, James's mom, is joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm glad we had the opportunity to do this, and anything I can do to help with James's case, you know, I will definitely do it.
You have been one of the greatest advocates, and I just want to say that every person who has read your article has said that it is the best article that has been written about James and our story.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm glad. I definitely don't skimp on the details. I want to make sure everybody knows each point. You know, it's really important. This is a very detailed and in-depth case. And it also is one of the biggest injustices I've ever seen or heard about. So it's really important, I think, to get it out there. And what you're doing, especially right now, you're working so hard to get his story out there. And with what you're up to at the moment, this is definitely going to make it a huge story.
Yes, we are doing everything we can to spread the word and spread awareness. And we have a wonderful team that has come together that is willing to help with protests and financials and other types of odds and ends to get the word out.
Oh, that's great. So do you want to talk about the protests that are coming up?
Yes. So we are going to be having 3 major protests this July. And I felt that it was appropriate to start these protests up again because, you know, we're nearing towards the end of COVID. People are more willing to come out. People are more willing to share their voice. I feel as though I've given the Palatine police and any other agencies enough time to reopen this case or try to assist me in any way. And that has not been done. I am still in a custody battle with my ex, who is, in my opinion, and the opinion of many others, a suspect regarding my son, considering he was the last one to see him alive. And that causes me great discomfort. There's even a letter from the prosecutor of Kane County that states the only reason that he wasn't charged with child pornography was due to a technicality. So you can imagine my concerns about having my 5-year-old daughter with this man. But regarding the protests, we want answers for my son. We want to know what caused his death. There are many details that are in the police report that do not add up. Mr. Beal said that he was at work. He was not at work. So these protests are to find out what caused the cervical spinal cord injury of my son. And we have a protest on the 2nd of July. We have a protest on the 9th of July. These are all on Friday. The 2nd is 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. The 9th is 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. And the 30th is going to be noon to 4 p.m. We have some major activists who are going to be joining us. We have speakers. I am also going to see if I can get a live performer to sing Amazing Grace in honor of James for one of those dates. There are going to be professional signs at this protest. We have invited the media. We have invited the Palatine Police Chief, Commander Bratcher, who was the original commander on James' case, is gone from the Palatine Police. So he will not be there because he is gone. It is said that he has retired. I don't believe he retired. He was in his 40s. And typically, a commander of a police station is not going to retire in their 40s, especially when they had just become the commander and had an opportunity to be the police chief due to their father being the previous police chief. I'm very excited at everything that we have going on. I'm very appreciative of the community that has come together, that has rallied for James. I would like to say, too, that a lot of people become confused with the 50-50 custody arrangement. A lot of people who have read my transcripts know that Judge Dalton had put a gag order on me during August, which was when my son was going through all of his prolapse rectums, and the situation became even worse. In fact, there was a literal report from a child protection MD that stated concerns of anal penetrative sexual abuse. And this is when Judge Dalton put a gag order on me. This gag order was then used by Judge Cruz after Judge Dalton recused himself to force me into a 50-50 custody agreement. If I did not agree to 50-50 custody, I would have been put in jail against my will, no jury, no trial, and my daughter would have gone to her father, who again is a suspect regarding my son's death. I could not take that chance, and that is why I did what I did, is to save my daughter and to be in her life. I now have her 50% of the time, which includes rights as well, medical and educational.
That's awesome. I'm glad to hear that at least. And the people who would question you accepting a 50-50 agreement have clearly never dealt with the family court system the way that you have. You've been through a lot. You've been dealing with this custody battle since early 2019.
It was early 2019. My sexual assault was March 2019. The sexual assault that Mr. Beal confirmed and admitted to in text messages, as well as Facebook messages. And I have an order of protection. That order of protection was for 2 years. It has since been extended by our new judge. In addition, Mr. Beal was actually charged for violating that order of protection by harassing me on our parenting app. So he was arrested and he was charged in December for that just recently. And his sentencing hearing is July 20th. In addition to that, we are also going for contempt because he's not allowing me to have any phone contact with our daughter during his parenting time. Even though I bought her a phone and I told him, you know, you can have contact whenever you want. I can have contact whenever I want. I'm paying for the phone. I'm paying for the service. And he's still not agreeing to that.
That's awful. So she has her own phone, but he's not letting her pick up when you call. And you have a scheduled time for that phone call, right? When he's got her.
We have a scheduled time for 7 o'clock. I'm supposed to be able to talk to her from 7 o'clock to 8 every single night when he's with her. And I don't even, you know, that's not something that I even ask. I typically ask every other night or, you know, when I'm missing her and I want to speak with her. And that's what's supposed to be allowed for both of us. And that's not happening. So, I mean, there's many different circumstances that are causing me concern. In addition to those concerns, you know, my daughter is still speaking out and making disclosures to professionals, which include, you know, nurses, a forensic interviewer, and a DCFS worker about, you know, sexual abuse. And I mean, are we really surprised? This is a man who had a hard drive of child pornography and admitted that the hard drive was solely his property and then asked for the evidence to be destroyed. This is a man who has never once tried to figure out what caused the death of my son. I'm sorry, but if you're a father of a child that has died and you claim that you weren't there when it happened, wouldn't you want to know what happened? Wouldn't you do everything that you could to figure out what happened and stop at nothing to get answers?
Exactly.
He has done nothing since James passed. He wouldn't even get him a headstone. James was buried in an unmarked grave for almost a year until I sent $500 finally, because me and my mom both tried calling All Saints and they wouldn't even let us pay for a headstone because he owned the plot. So I had to send him money through our parenting app just for that to be done. And then his mother's excuse, and she actually posted this on one of my Facebook posts, was that they didn't have the money and they had other things they had to pay for. But yet you're telling everyone that this was the greatest tragedy that ever happened in your life. And you have money to pay for three lawyers during the last police case in reference to my daughter, but you don't have the money to pay for a headstone for your grandson who passed away when it is supposedly it's the greatest tragedy that happened in your lives. I mean, the way his mother has been acting, the way his father has been acting, the way Tom has been acting in regards to his own child, it's kind of mind-boggling. I've never seen a family grieve in such a way, because they're not grieving. That's the point. I mean, they haven't shown a shred of sadness or grief or anything. I mean, even when I said that Sasha was grieving, her father denied it and said she wasn't grieving and didn't even care or think about James. And I was just like, what? She literally talks about him almost every day. She asked to go to his grave all the time with me and my mom. She's like, can we go? Can we have a picnic there? Can we be with James? I mean, she still talks to him in her way. She even talks about how she has a portal with him and she goes to see him and talk to him. I mean, she loved her brother. I have pictures of them together. They were inseparable. And the way his family is acting about this is disgusting. I don't understand why you can pay for all these lawyers and everything else. The same lawyer is on his criminal case that's on our family court case. And yet you don't have money to pay for a headstone for your deceased child. It's sickening. I don't care. I'd work three jobs today if it meant having to pay for a headstone for my son. That should have been done first thing.
People will give people money for that sort of thing. You can easily raise those funds. And what's showing through all of this, through all of their actions and their behaviors, is that their priorities are absolutely in the wrong place. If, for example, they're completely innocent and this is just a total accident or a natural death, if that were the case, they're still showing that their priorities are completely in the wrong place.
Oh, I completely agree. And it's horribly concerning. I mean, it was extremely easy for me to get my order of protection extended because he doesn't even try to act like a normal person on our parenting app. It's constant insults, attacks. He talks horribly about James, calls the protests a clown show, a train wreck. He calls our community of loving individuals a cult. Mm-hmm. I mean, all I've been doing since James passed is trying to get answers, is calling up everyone I know to try to get those answers, is talking to police, talking to detectives, talking to prosecutors. I mean, this is between working two jobs. This is between caring for my child. And everyone knows I'm a non-driver as well. So what's his excuse? He has no job. He has no responsibilities. The primary caregivers for Sasha when she's at his home are his father and his stepmother.
And she is the one who the disclosures were made against, right?
That is correct. Yeah. And that was brought on by him. He was the one who said something to the mandated reporter who then had to report it. And I don't believe for a second that this woman did anything to my child. And she has never mentioned that this woman has done anything to her before our custody agreement was signed. So in my opinion, this was a way for him to try to attempt to, again, paint me as somebody who was coaching our child and trying to get custody. What he needs to understand is there is not a courtroom in this world that will ever give him full custody of this child after what has happened with my son.
I certainly hope not. Just the fact that he accepted the coroner's original autopsy report, undetermined death, and basically dusted his hands and walked away is inconceivable.
Exactly.
How can you do that, especially when a second autopsy does turn up a cervical spinal injury that you have no answers for?
Right. And if he had just fallen, wouldn't you have said that?
Right.
I mean, it's been 2 years, right? And I got this anonymous message talking about supposedly my daughter was the one who pushed him off the bed while she was carrying him. And it was an accident. I was like, no, this is garbage. And I can't believe someone would try to blame my child who has been through hell and back.
I've heard it happen before. And it is the lowest of the low to try to blame a sibling for the baby's death.
I was reading this and I was like, okay, well, she wasn't even mentioned in the police report.
Right.
Her presence wasn't even talked about or discussed. And there was no bruising to the front or to his neck that would have even resembled some sort of fall. The only bruising was the deep tissue muscle bruise on his lower back, which that would have been prolonged bruising because it was in deep tissue of the muscle.
And it wasn't in the area of the spinal injury in the first place.
So that wouldn't, like, you couldn't even say it's a fall. That doesn't even make any medical sense. It sounds like somebody is really doing their best to hide the truth.
It does. It really does. And I said it in the last episode, but I'm not a conspiracy theory person. But when everything points toward this being a cover-up of some kind, it's hard to turn away that evidence. You know, you can't deny point after point after point that someone is covering something up, and it's more than one person. It's at every level. Why is the police department refusing to investigate the death after the second autopsy came back, especially?
It wasn't even just the police. My forensic pathologist sent her report to DCFS.
Mm-hmm.
And DCFS sent her a letter saying unfounded.
Wow.
They're like, we're not going to investigate this. I'm like, you're not going to investigate a cervical spinal cord of a child when there was suspected sexual abuse of the same child who had to have an emergency rectal repair surgery when he wasn't even two? I mean, I'm sorry, but this is just as egregious as the AJ Friend case. This is absolutely ridiculous. There is no way DCFS can be this incompetent. I don't even think it's DCFS because DCFS are just soldiers for the court. So I think this was all the judges doing. You had two judges that were pissed off, embarrassed, and disgraced. I think they could be pissed about anything. The biggest clue to me that that's what's been going on. So the last police report in reference to my daughter in the last case, this case actually went to the state's attorney's office, which was amazing to me. They had that much evidence that they actually took it to the prosecutor's office this time. But anyways, what was amazing to me about this particular case was in the evidence of what they collected, Scott Sheen's office, because they were the ones that were involved as the attorneys for Jerry Beal and Thomas during this case, they actually tried to put the GAL report as evidence. Now, this GAL report was impounded and the GAL was removed from Kane County. Not was she removed from Kane County. She had an emergency removal off the case of her own choosing 6 days before my son died. And you're attempting to put her report in as evidence in an aggravated sexual assault case. And that was the attorney. I mean, Scott Sheen would know he couldn't do that. He would know that's unethical. And I think it's actually illegal because it's an impounded report. You're going against a judge's orders. And this is his same attorney that's on our family court case. So I find that very bizarre.
Everything about this is bizarre. And speaking of unethical, I mean, that could very well be the middle name of multiple parties in this case. But I just don't understand how all of this has converged. And now that you have done so much work, there's so much public outcry about James's story and his death that for this to continue to be uninvestigated is just baffling to me.
Yeah. And not even just that, but the child pornography, the definite assault of my son. I mean, with that kind of evidence, with a protection specialist from Children's Lurie's, who is the best of the best, saying she has concerns of anal penetrative abuse to my one-year-old. Why did that get buried? That was nowhere near in the GAL report. That wasn't in the police report. Not once was it mentioned that there were concerns of sexual abuse. Not once. And that is highly concerning to me. And when they took the photo of my son, which they were supposed to use for the sexual assault case, they took it after his rectum had been put in, knowing it would come out again. Because it was coming out 3 to 4 times a day due to having no anal tone. And that was from, that was a direct report from the nurse.
And he was hospitalized multiple times throughout that month, right?
From what I counted, it was 9 times. He was going back and forth from Northwest Community to Children's Lurie's on a constant basis for a 2-week period. Tom's own mother quoted that, that his rectum had been prolapsing for 2 weeks straight, and they'd been back and forth in hospitals. You know what Tom said? That this happened because my son took a really large poop. That's literally what he told the doctors in the medical report. But he had no history of constipation. But that one day he had such a massive amount of constipation. And then the whole rectum came out.
And wouldn't stay back in despite surgery and other corrective measures. That makes no sense at all.
No, it doesn't make a lick of sense. None of this makes a lick of sense. And that is why I am protesting. That is why I'm raising my voice. That is why we have been reaching out to news stations, politicians, media, because this is just absolutely insane. And if we let this happen to James, what other children are we going to let this happen to?
Exactly. There's too many. And Illinois DCFS needs to answer for their neglect of these children. If they're going to be held accountable in AJ's case, there's no reason why they shouldn't be held accountable in many other cases, James is included.
I mean, we still have a little girl who was stuffed under a couch, and DCFS has never held anyone accountable.
Yep, Samaj. No one's ever been arrested or anything. The same thing. No investigation, or at least
her
not
body was under a couch cushion for days. It's disgusting. And with the Rika J case, the only reason they arrested the father and the girlfriend was because they found a video. It wasn't the bruising. It wasn't the multiple injuries to that poor little girl's body. It was because later on they found a video proving, because this woman was so sick. She recorded herself beating this innocent child.
Unbelievable. And so it's the only evidence you can't refute. And that's the only reason any charges were brought.
Exactly. It's sickening to me. It is sickening what they have done to James. It is sickening what they continue to do to my daughter. And if you ask any professional, everyone is convinced now, since it's been 2 years, and have said they've seen her behavior. They've seen how she's progressed within my care. They see her triggers and how she acts. And there is not one person who doesn't believe that it's trauma.
Including all of the professionals.
Yes. In fact, every single professional right now wants my daughter to see a specialist, a therapist regarding trauma and sexual assault. Even DCFS now is in agreement with that.
And can you explain why she's not seeing that therapist?
Yeah, her father will not agree to it unless I agree to DCFS Family Intake Services, which is a step before foster care. And given all this disclosures that Sasha has been making, she would be ripped from both of us.
Right.
And I am not losing my daughter again.
I understand that completely, especially knowing some of the things that go on in foster care. And you, at this point, can't trust the state with your daughter's care.
No, we can't trust the state. We can't trust the system because the system has ultimately failed. I think it's very odd that of all the things that Tom could have been charged with, they charge him on the smallest thing possible. It's unbelievable to me that they even charged him with that.
Right.
It does make me feel like he's losing credibility, though, because I don't think they would have charged him with that. Because say I am crazy, right? I'm this crazy lady that he's trying to make me out to be. well, if I'm this crazy lady who's been harassing you and your family for 2 years, and there's evidence, there's proof that I'm just making everything up, nobody in the world would charge you for harassing me on a parenting app.
Right. And where is all of this proof that he has that you are out of your mind?
None of it has ever been shown. In fact, 3 professionals have cleared me.
Kara's Change.org petition demanding the Palatine Police Department investigate the untimely and suspicious death of her 2-year-old son, James Riker Beale, on October 31, 2019, currently has nearly 18,000 signatures at the time of this recording. The momentum behind the Justice for James movement is growing. If you haven't yet, please sign the petition, which I'll link in the show notes. If you haven't yet followed the Justice for James Facebook page or joined the James Needs Justice virtual protest group, please do so. I'll also provide links to those. Finally, if you're anywhere near the Palatine, Illinois area, please consider attending one or all of the 3 upcoming protests, which will take place outside the Palatine Police Department, located at 595 North Hicks Road in Palatine. The dates are July 2, 2021 from 4 to 8 p.m., July 9th from 4 to 8 p.m., and July 30th from noon to 4 p.m. If you attend, please remember to wear blue and bring your picket signs. We can't let up until an investigation is opened into James's death. Healthy 2-year-olds do not develop untreatable rectal prolapses and die from spontaneous spinal cord injuries. Someone knows what happened to James in the months, weeks, days, and hours before he died, and Kara, along with her ever-growing army of supporters, will not rest until the truth is uncovered. James needs justice. That's it for this week. Join me next week for another case. If you like the show, please follow or subscribe to Suffer the Little Children on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast listening app. And please leave me a 5-star rating and a positive review on your favorite podcast platform. You can also subscribe on YouTube by searching Suffer the Little Children Podcast. Visit the website at sufferthelittlechildrenpod.com, where you can listen to episodes or become a patron for rewards ranging from a shout-out by name on the show to exclusive gifts. Follow the podcast on Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, and Pinterest at Suffer the Little Children Pod, and on Twitter and TikTok at STLC Pod. View photos related to today's episode on Facebook and Instagram. For more stories like the one you heard today, visit sufferthelittlechildrenblog.com. This podcast is researched, written, hosted, edited, and produced by Lane. Intro theme music is by Dream Note Music, and all music for the show is licensed from audiojungle.net. Email tips, comments, questions, or case suggestions to sufferthelittlechildrenpod@gmail.com. For more information about preventing or reporting child abuse, visit childhelp.org or call your area's child abuse hotline. If you see something, say something. Until next week, bye everyone.